Okay, so today we continue the topic of secret societies. Last class, we discussed how they come into power. Today we will look at where they come from and what they believe. Okay? So to understand secret societies, I first need to explain to you the history of religion in the Western world. So in the Western world, there have been three major stages of religious development. And again, I will oversimplify for the purpose of clarity. Okay, so this is a simplified version of the history. So the three major stages of religious development in the Western world are the mother goddess, polytheism, and monotheism. Polytheism means many gods. You believe in many gods. Monotheism means one god, that only one god exists. So the mother goddess civilization came about because of agriculture. And in an agricultural world, you have two problems. The first problem is to make sure that your crops are healthy and you can harvest them in time. Second problem is to give birth, to have as many children as possible to work the fields. Okay, so these are the two problems. And because of that, a religion developed in order to facilitate both, called the mother goddess civilization. So the center of this religion is the womb. The woman's womb is considered a divine portal from the spirit world into our world. It's almost like a cave, right? In which the spirit world can come out and manifest itself in our world. So the center of this religion is the womb of the woman. And as such, the woman are in control. What's really important is to understand that in this world, everything is interconnected, harmonized, balanced together. So the womb is the center of this world, but then you have the stars. Okay, the stars. And of course, this gives rise to astrology. Astrology is a study of the movement of the stars in order to understand its impact on our world. Okay? Then you have, of course, the crops, right? So in an ideal world, all three are aligned together. By setting the stars, you know when to best plant the crops and when to best have children. And in this world, again, it is the woman who are in control. They have the high status in society because they believe that women are direct representatives of the mother goddess who rules the world. Usually in this society, the mother goddess is represented as a bird. Okay, a bird. Why? Because if you think about it, if you study all the animals in nature, it's the bird that has dominion over the sky. And if life comes from the sky, it makes sense that the mother goddess must be a bird of some sort. But the mother goddess is also paired with a bull, okay? A bull. Why? Because the bull is a symbol of virility and energy. You cannot get pregnant as a woman by yourself. You need a man to do it for you, okay? So the bird and the bull are the two symbols of worship in this world. Now, this world is very strange from our perspective because there's no property. Everything belongs to everyone. There's no hierarchy. Everyone is the same. And there's no such thing as sex by yourself, okay? So sex is actually a community act. So that these rituals called fertility cults, in which they have sex together. In fact, many men will have sex with one woman. And it makes sense because as a woman, you want to have the best DNA. You want to have the best sperm, right? You don't know who's going to have the best sperm, so just have sex with everyone, and whoever has the best sperm will give it to you. Okay? So that's the mother goddess civilization. Then we switch to polytheism. So why did we make the switch? The answer is war. For the first time in human history, as populations increase, there's now struggle for resources. And what's the most important resource in this world? Do you guys know? The most important resource is women, right? Females. Because it's females that give birth. And that's the, and so with war, we have a new concept called property. In order to get men to fight wars, you have to give them something as a reward, right? So they get to have a woman, a wife. And now this wife belongs to them and only them. So in this world, what happens is that you now have property, hierarchy, and marriage. And the role of the woman decreases and the role of the man increases. Okay? At the same time, what's happening is that these different societies, in order to fight wars, they have a god. Okay? And when they go to war, it's like the gods are going to war. And if you lose the war, what it means is that your god is inferior to their god. So now you have a hierarchy of gods. So to maintain peace, what happens is that if you lose the war, you admit that your god is weaker than their god, and you now must obey their god, right? And this is what we call the pantheon. So remember, in the Greek pantheon, Zeus is at the top, and you have Apollo, Ares, Aphrodite, okay? Everyone else is a lower god. But before, they were separate gods. And in a series of wars, the people who believe Zeus is the best god won out against the other gods. And as a result, the other gods became Zeus's children. Yes? Do you have a question?
Why does the men are fight for women, but women don't fight for men? Like the women don't fight for the men. So why?
Okay. So the question is, why do men go to war and why don't women go to war? Okay. So that's a really good question. Okay. So let me explain to you very slowly. So in this world, the women are in control, right? So women have all the status. But over time, as populations increase, you have young men who have no families. And these young men are discarded from the societies because of lack of resources. So these young men have a problem. They need to find wives in order to survive. So these young men start to raid other societies in order to capture women. Okay, do you understand? So in this society, it's never young women who are discarded because they have value to their society. It's always young men who are discarded. And as a result, these young men become like wolves, okay? They become like a wolf pack who then go and pillage other villages. And that's how you start, and that's how you have the origin of war. Okay, does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay, so now you have this pantheon of gods, okay, which leads to polytheism. Then we make the switch from polytheism to monotheism. Why? Because now you have a new idea called empire. Specifically, the Roman Empire, and they introduce a new religion called Christianity, which is the first monotheistic religion in the world. There's a lot of debate as to what was the first monotheistic religion. Some people say Zoroastrianism, some people say Judaism. I will show you in this class later on that actually the first religion that was monotheistic is Christianity, okay? So the difference between this society, which is a society based on war, is you still, there's a lot of humans, but humans are still the most precious resource. Therefore, it is not in your best interest to kill everyone. But when you have an empire, like the Roman Empire, you don't have to worry about killing other people. In fact, you can go and destroy entire societies, which is what the Romans did. And you can now, as an empire, impose your reality, your God, on everyone else. And that's how you have monotheism. Does that make sense? All right? So, let me explain that. What I want to show you now is how the worldview, our understanding of the world, changes over time. Okay? So, in the Mother Goddess civilization, there are two things about their world that's very different from our world, okay? So the first major difference, and this is really important for you guys to remember, is they understood that mind led to matter. Mind leads to matter. But in our world, we believe that it's matter that led to mind. Okay, do you understand? So in science class, you're taught we have a brain, then the brain, because of synaptic connections, creates the mind. Okay, so it's matter that leads to mind. Even though we're taught this, if you think about it, it actually doesn't make any sense. Because how does our small little brain, how is it able to do so much processing, which is the mind, right? How are we able to imagine? How are we able to dream? It's really confusing for us. And quite honestly, if you talk to the very best neuroscientists in the world, their response will always be, don't ask this question. Okay? It's never like, we don't know. It's always like, don't ask this question. Okay? This question is forbidden to ask in neuroscience. But so throughout most of human history, we believe that it was mind that led to matter. That it's the mind that creates the brain in order to understand the world. Okay, that makes a lot more sense than matter leads to mind, okay? Okay, so that's the first major difference. Throughout most of human history, most societies believe that it was the mind that creates the brain. The second major difference is that this is a metaphorical world. In other words, they spoke using metaphors. They understood the world through metaphors. Today we live in a literal world. Okay, what's the difference? Well, the difference is this. Let's just say that you and I fight. Well, we would say that, okay, what happened was that I became angry, the emotion overwhelmed me, and then I hit him, then he got angry, then he hit me back. Okay, this is a literal interpretation. But back then, the metaphorical understanding was that anger is a god who seized me and who propelled me into the fight. And then anger unleashed the god of vengeance who fought back by seizing the other person to fight me back, okay? So we believed for most of human history that we were controlled by forces outside our control. Now, today, you may believe that the literal world makes more sense. But if you think about it, from the perspective of human thought, okay? How do you understand the world? How do you interpret what goes on in the world? The metaphorical understanding is actually much more useful. And that's why, and I know this is hard for you guys to understand, back then, they were much more creative than we are today. Okay? And also, the things that they were able to do are beyond our imagination. So for example, we've never really figured out how the Egyptians created the pyramids. Okay? For our explanation is aliens did it. Because their mind is beyond our imagination. Okay, so that shows you the switch. Now when we go to the polytheistic world, this system still continues, but they add more elements to make it more complex. Okay? So the first element is they believe that we are controlled by gods. We are the playthings of gods. Now, what's really important to understand is that these gods, Zeus, Apollo, Ares, they're no different from mortals. The only difference is they just live forever. Okay? So, for example, if you're a king, what do you like to do? Well, you like to go around and chase young girls around, okay? What does Zeus do all day? What does Apollo do all day? These gods, all they do is go around and chase young girls around. Okay, so there's absolutely no difference. Above the gods are the older gods, fortune, fate. So the belief was that even though these are gods, they're still controlled by forces beyond their understanding like fortune and fate. What mattered in this world was not to be good. What mattered in this world is to be lucky, okay? To be fortunate. Because that showed you that the gods favored you. And the last element, the most important element, is the unwritten and immutable laws of the universe. Okay, so a concept like justice. So think of gravity, how gravity gives structure to the universe, right? Well, back then they believed the same thing, where at the most fundamental level, there were concepts that existed like justice. And if you could have the favor of the gods, and you could be very lucky, but if you did things that were unjust, then eventually you'd be punished for it, because you're breaking the structure of the universe. Okay? So this was the polytheistic worldview. Now, when you go to the monotheistic worldview, all this changes, because now you have a new concept that never existed in human history before, called one true God. And this changes everything, okay? Because before, as you can see, humans fought in a very complex, sophisticated, diverse, imaginative way about the world. But now, with the advent of Christianity, it's only one true God. And as such, you have three new concepts that become dominant in this world. These concepts have existed before, but now they're dominant. The first concept is the idea of truth. Okay? If there's one true God, then there must be one truth to the universe. And so, when we move towards the truth, that is good, right? But when we move away from the truth, that is evil. So now you have a new concept called evil that didn't really exist before. Okay? You did good things because in this world, it was to your advantage. Now, in this world, if you defy God, that is evil. Okay? And now with truth and evil, you have a new concept called the individual. Before, in this world, what mattered was your family, your community, your society, the people around you. Now, with the advent of one true God, the community, the family doesn't matter. What mattered is your loyalty, your faith in the one true God. So you could actually step outside your community and just do what you believe is right, as long as you have faith in the one true God. All right? Okay. So this three concepts, truth, evil, individual, are important for you to remember because they underpin modernity. These three concepts, once they grow to a certain extent, they will create modernity, the world we live in. Okay? Our world is controlled by these three forces. Now, what's important for us to understand is these three concepts are beyond the human intuition. You cannot logically, by yourself, deduce or come up with these three concepts. This world of the modern goddess, it's intuitive. Okay? This polytheistic world is also intuitive, but the Christian world now is counterintuitive. Okay? So as a result, for monotheism to triumph, because it is so counterintuitive, it must now destroy the polytheistic world. Okay? So the Romans spent a lot of time, taking centuries and centuries, to destroy the polytheistic world. But the thing is this, you can never ever kill an idea. The idea, if it is being suppressed, just goes underground. Okay? So remember, here in the modern God civilization, the main instrument of religious worship are fertility cults run by women. Well, now that war has come and men have taken over from women, what happened is that the woman went underground to create new religious organizations called mystery schools. And mystery schools, what they're trying to do is they're trying to maintain the best knowledge and traditions of the modern goddess civilization. Okay? Especially the fact that we come from the mind. We created the universe through our imagination. Okay, that's the main secret that they're trying to maintain. These mystery schools become extremely popular among the elite because they offer great sex. Okay? The elite join these mystery clubs as sex clubs, basically. Remember, in this civilization, what matters is the womb. So they develop all sorts of like secret sexual techniques to please the woman, to make the woman feel as though she's in harmony with the universe. In this world, the mother goddess, sex is a mechanism to communicate with the universe, to discover the secrets of the universe. And so they maintain these rituals in the mystery schools. And the most powerful people will participate in these mystery schools. They're called mystery schools not because they're secret, but because everyone is sworn to secrecy. So if you ever divulge what actually goes on in these mystery schools, you'll be punished by death. Okay, you'll be executed by the members. But with the advent of Christianity, these mystery schools now are a threat to the empire. Okay, because these mystery schools are where the elite, the local elite, hang out. So now what happens is, now they become secret societies. Okay? That's where they come from. Secret societies are an attempt to maintain the secrets of the universe against the advent of Christianity and empire. And secret societies have been around for a long, long time. You may have heard of certain secret societies like the Knights Templars, Rosicrucians, Illuminati, the Freemasons, okay? They're all very powerful. They're still around. Yes, I understand that. But what I'm saying is there are a lot more secret societies that we do not know about and who've been around for much longer, okay? But they're all trying to maintain the secret of the universe, which is that mind leads to matter. That's the great secret of the universe. And this is something that we've always believed and always known, but with the advent of Christianity, this has become suppressed over time. All right? So any questions before I move on? Okay. So now what I will do is I'm going to explain to you Christianity. And I'll explain to you what the secret societies believe, okay? I've already explained to you where they come from, but now what I will do is explain to you what they actually believe about the universe. Okay, so what I'm going to do is, first thing I'm going to do is explain to you what most Christians believe about their religion, okay? This is called the Orthodox or the canonical perspective. Okay, so this is what you're taught officially by the church. Christianity has many different factions, but they all believe in a certain interpretation of the Bible, okay? Then what I'm going to do is I'm going to show you the apocryphal. Apocryphal. Apocryphal just means hidden, okay? Or secret, or esoteric. Just the secret knowledge that is kept within these secret societies. All right, so the Orthodox canonical comes from a reading of the Bible. And the Bible, at its core, is a story of the covenant between God and humans, okay? Covenant. Covenant means contract or understanding. So throughout the Bible, there are a series of covenants, okay? The first covenant is between Adam and God. So you may have heard of the story of the Garden of Eden, right? God creates the universe, then creates the Garden of Eden, where he puts Adam and Eve. And God says to Adam and Eve, this is paradise. You don't have to work. Just enjoy life. The food is free. The food is plentiful. Every day you'll be happy and free of want. You will live forever. But there's only one thing that you must not do. And only one thing, okay? Whatever you do, do not eat from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Just don't do that and you'll be okay. So of course, what do Adam and Eve do? They eat the stupid fruit, okay? So then what God does is he banishes Adam and Eve from the Garden of Eden, and now they're forced to work to grow food to feed themselves, okay? And this leads to society, okay, development of society. God looks down from the heavens and sees that humans now are going to war. They are fighting their private property. And God says, I don't want this crap. This is not why I created humans, okay? So he's like, you know what, I'm gonna destroy everyone and start over. But then he sees a human that he likes named Noah. And this leads to God saying to Noah, build a ship, build an ark, and save yourself because I will flood the universe. I will destroy the world. So God destroys the world and Noah lives. And then God says to Noah, you know what? That's kind of silly. I shouldn't destroy the universe. I promise never ever destroy the world again. Okay, that is his covenant with Noah. But God sees that humans are still wicked and evil. And he says, you know what? I need to find a man who is good. And I need him to grow a nation that can be the light of the world, that will be the best example of what it means to be a good person. So he finds a man named Abraham, and Abraham, of course, is the father of a nation called Israel. And so this is the third covenant. God says to Abraham, you and your children, your grandchildren, your great-grandchildren are now loyal to me. I see you as the chosen people, and I give you the promised land. Okay, that's what Israel is, a promised land. Over time, what happens is that Abraham and his people, they go off to Egypt. And in Egypt, they become slaves to the Pharaoh of Egypt. And then God is like, you know what? I should check up on the Israelites and see how they're doing. He looks down and he says, oops, they're now slaves to the Pharaoh. So I need now to fix this, okay? So he appoints a man named Moses to free the Israelites from Egypt and take them back to the promised land. When Moses does this, God says, now what you must do is give the Israelites my law, the Ten Commandments. Okay? The law. Because otherwise, I can't trust you guys to behave. Okay? So now this is the fourth covenant. So now the Israelites are back in the promised land, but again, and even though there's laws, they still become wicked and they start to worship false gods. So God punishes them, and God is now looking for a good leader of the Israelites. And then finally he finds a person named David who becomes the king of the Israelites. And God says to David, you are the person I've been looking for all of eternity. You are the best example of what it means to be a faithful follower of me, Yahweh. Okay? And so this is something called the Davidic covenant. The Davidic covenant states that God will always favor Israel as the chosen nation, and the house of David will rule Israel forever. Okay? So guys, quick question here. Who wrote the Bible? Probably this guy, okay? Right? If you had to guess who wrote the Bible, probably not Moses, probably not Abraham, probably not Noah, probably not Adam, probably this guy, okay? Because he's saying that all of these five, okay, I am the best. I'm the person that God loves the most. My family will rule the world because that is God's will, okay? Now, of course, that's not what happens. Eventually, David has a son named Solomon, and these two are considered the two best rulers of Israel. And this is what we call the Davidic kingdom, okay? The Davidic kingdom. the golden age of Israel. But after Solomon, the Israelites turned wicked again, and then God has to punish them and scattered Israel across the world. Okay? And so the last covenant is the arrival of Jesus. What Jesus does is that, first of all, he reasserts the law of Moses and say to the Israelite people, remember Moses and his law, because that's what God wants. Then he sacrifices himself in order to free the Israelites of the original sin, right? Because God's pissed off at people because people ate the fruit. That's the original sin. That's the first crime of disobedience against God. So by killing himself, Jesus frees humanity of the original sin. He redeems humanity. Okay? Now, the last thing that Jesus does is he creates a new covenant, okay? A new covenant between humanity and God. From now on, because Jesus has freed everyone from the original sin, everyone can now be with God. You don't have to be Israelite. You don't have to follow the Mosaic law. You don't even have to come from the family of David. Anyone and everyone can now love God, and God will love that person back, okay? And this, of course, starts Christianity, all right? So this, guys, is called Judaism, what the Jews believe, okay? And this is all six is what Christians believe, Christianity. All right, the first five covenants are what Jews believe to be true. But they do believe that eventually someone will return to restore the kingdom of David, okay? But not Jesus. Not Jesus. The Christians believe that Jesus is the final prophet. Okay? In fact, Jesus is God himself. That's why it's called Christianity. Because they believe in Jesus Christ. So this is the entire history of Judaism and Christianity. What they believe, officially. Any questions before I move on? Okay, so now as you can understand, if you are a true Christian or you're a true Jew, there are actually lots of issues with this understanding. Okay? The first issue is, why did God have to kick us out of the Garden of Eden? I mean, was eating of fruit so bad as to banish us from paradise? Like, what was wrong reading that fruit? Okay, that's a great mystery in the religion. Why did the original sin happen? And why was God so angry? Second problem is Noah. I mean, like, God destroyed the world because we were wicked. But after he destroyed the world, we were still wicked. So why did God have to destroy the world in the first place? If he's God, then should he understand how humans are? That wouldn't he understand that destroying the world would just, I mean, it doesn't really do anything, okay? So that's kind of strange. The last problem is Jesus. Who was Jesus? And why did he have to kill himself? Why did God have to send his only son to die for humanity? Okay, so if you're new to Christianity, the very idea of Jesus actually doesn't make much sense to you. I grew up in the West. I grew up in a Christian world, and it never made sense to me, okay? People told me about how great Jesus was, like, okay, the story doesn't make any sense. So if you're a really smart person, there are lots of questions about this interpretation of the Bible, and these are the three major ones, okay? So now what I will do now is I will explain to you what the esoteric, what secret societies believe really happened. So, I want to start with Noah. Why did God destroy the world? The reason why God destroyed the world is not because of humans, but because of something else. These people are called the Nephilim. Nephilim. Okay, also, by the way, if you guys are interested in learning more, there are two books that are not part of the Bible, but which will give you insight into the esoteric knowledge, okay? The first is called the Book of Enoch. Book of Enoch. The second is called the Gospel of Thomas. Okay? All right. So I am using these two books as sources for my explanation, okay? So the Nephilim are children of angels and woman, okay? So what happened was that the angels who were supposed to watch humanity came down and saw, wow, these humans, these females are really beautiful. So what do? Well, they have sex with them, right? And then what happens? They have lots and lots of children. And what do these children do? These children enslave humanity. These people are called Nephilim, okay? So if you want to understand what happened, let's do a thought experiment. Let's just say that there's this group of superhumans called the Avengers. You know, Spider-Man, Iron Man, Captain America, Thor, okay? And they fight Thanos and they save the world. And now what do? Well, they're bored, so they start to have lots and lots of sex. They have lots and lots of children. And these children now are like demigods, right? So what do? Well, they enslave humanity. But then what do? Well, they start fighting amongst themselves. Okay, so that's basically what happened. So God had to destroy the Nephilim because they are not natural. Angels and humans are not supposed to have sex with each other. And this creates a new power called the Nephilim. The problem, though, is the Nephilim are divine, and therefore, they cannot be killed. So you can get rid of their mortal bodies, but now they become demons who live underground and are in the shadows. And guess what, guys? They're still here today. So these two societies, they believe the Nephilim are real, and they still control the world. The richest people in the world are actually Nephilim. Okay? Because they've been around for thousands of years, and therefore they're able to control the development of humanity. Okay, so they're called the Nephilim. So that's easy to understand. But now the question then is, wait a minute, why did Adam eat that fruit, and why did Jesus have to kill himself? Well, now it gets really complicated, okay? So now I need to explain to you what the secret societies believe, okay? Remember, they believe that mind leads to matter. What does that mean? Okay, let me explain what this means. Mind leads to matter. In the beginning, the true God is called the monad. Okay, the one. So just think of this as the core of the universe, the sun, the divine sun. The monad is so powerful that when he breathes, okay, he vibrates divine energy. And over millions of years, this divine energy creates new life forms. Okay, so the first life form are called the dyads. Dyads are just pairs, okay, usually male, female, that are children of the monad. And they're able by themselves to create new universes as well, okay? So the dyads start to emanate, okay? So the entire universe is vibration. It's vibrational energy. It's the breathing of these cosmic beings, okay? And over time, over millions of years, these vibrations become atoms, which then leads to matter, okay? That's what they mean by mind leads to matter. Now, one of these dyads, named Sophia, decides, you know what? I can be just as good as the monad. What does the monad do? The monad is able to propagate by itself, by himself. He doesn't need to mate. So Sophia says, you know what? I'm going to produce something by myself. I'm going to have a child by myself to prove I am the monad, okay? So she does this, and she creates a new being, okay? A new being. This is called the Demiurge. There are different names. We'll call them the Demiurge. The Demiurge is a monster, a monstrosity, because it goes against the natural order. So then Sophia is like, oops, I shouldn't have done that. So what does she do? She abandons the monstrosity. She throws him away and hides him in a sea of clouds. So no one knows he actually exists. Okay? Even the Demiurge doesn't know he exists. The Demiurge does not know about this world, right? Therefore, he believes that he must be the one true God, capable of creating new life. So what does he create? Us. Okay? He creates the planet Earth. And then he creates Adam and Eve. Okay? That's what a monster would do. Okay? Look at this history. What kind of God would kick someone out of paradise for eating a fruit? A monster would do it, right? What kind of God would kill a people for no particular reason? A monster would do that, okay? What kind of God would demand that a people be loyal to that person? A monster. What kind of God would enforce his will on a people? A monster. What kind of God would say to someone, you're the only person I like, everyone else I hate? A monster would do that. Okay? So, in other words, the true secret that these secret societies are trying to keep is the God we worship today, it's the false God. And we are actually in a prison created by this false God. And that's who Jesus was. Jesus was a cosmic being sent by the monad to tell us the truth about the world. And that's why he died, because the Roman Empire could not allow people to see the truth. If I told you the truth, you would know it right away. You would wake up. Therefore, the truth tellers must be killed. Okay? So that's what these secret societies believe. They believe that the monad exists, and the mind of the monad is what creates the universe. And Jesus was sent to remind us that even though we're in a prison, there's still the monad in you. There's a spark in you, a divine light in you that you can activate. And if you activate it, then you will return to the monad. You will see the truth for yourself. And when you die, your soul, which is part of the monad, will want to return to the monad and can escape this world. But to activate this light, you must be a good person. You must love one another. You must reject money and materialism. And grades, okay? Grades in school. You must reject competition. You must reject material wealth in order to pursue spiritual happiness. Okay? That was the message of Jesus. Now you can imagine that the powers that be, the Nephilim, would not like this, okay? It's a threat to Nephilim, who now control the prison created by the Demiurge. It's also a direct threat to the Demiurge. And that's why these secret societies have been, over the centuries, been repressed, been executed, okay, been massacred. But they believe that it is their duty to protect the secret, because only by protecting the secret can humanity be ultimately saved. Right? Does that make sense? Okay, any questions? All right? So you have the official version, which is what you're taught in school, but now you have the secret version that is only taught in secret societies. The other thing about secret societies that's really important is they believe that most of us cannot accept the truth. If I told you this, you think I'm crazy and report me to the police. Okay? Therefore, they can only wait for people to wake up by themselves and approach them. And if you approach them, then they will test you, and then they will reveal the secret of the universe to you. Okay? And that's why these secret societies were founded, and that's why they've been so persistent and so successful over the centuries. Right? So now the question is, okay, this is a great theory, but how do we know it's true or not? How do we know that this is actually what they really thought? Well, we know because in poetry, in literature, the members of the secret societies have embedded the secret within the poetry. So if you're able to analyze the poetry properly, you will see for yourself that this is true. Okay? So what we're going to do is we will study today the greatest poem in the English language called Paradise Lost by John Milton, who actually was a member of these secret societies. Okay? Any questions before I continue? Okay. Okay, we're going to reproduce lots, okay? Are we clear? Any questions? Yeah, there's a question here.
If all of these are from the false god, do we have a like truth god? Like, do we? Or like, it's just a thing?
Okay, yeah. So in this system, the monad is a true god. Okay? And the question then is, why doesn't the monad interfere? Why doesn't the monad stop the demiurge from imprisoning us and making our lives hell? And there are two explanations for why this is happening. Okay, the first explanation is that the monad does not interfere in material affairs. Okay, because the monad is it's all mind. And also, we have the capacity to reject this world and return to the monad. Right? So why would he force us to do what we don't want to do? Okay. If you want to return to him, then you have the choice to engage in spirituality, to engage in goodness, to engage in knowledge, and then you'll be able to return to him. Okay, that's the first explanation. Second explanation is that, and this comes from Dante, okay? The monad is a force that is eternal, perfect, and immutable. And therefore, the monad has no imagination. But how do you grow as a being? You grow through the imagination. So in order for the monad to continue to grow, the monad allowed for the demiurge to create human beings. Because as human beings, we are flawed, we make mistakes, we commit evil. But by committing evil, by making mistakes, we expand the imagination of the universe. Okay, which allows the monad to expand. Okay, so in this perspective, what is happening is that each time we imagine, we return to the monad. Okay, so it's hard to understand, but the monad, it's there, it's eternal, but it's also becoming, it's also moving. And so when we imagine things, when we commit mistakes, but at the same time, when we recognize these mistakes and try to adjust for these mistakes, we expand the imagination of the monad. And that's why these secret societies believe that evil and good exist together. You can only be good if you do evil. Okay? Because by committing evil, it gives you a chance to become better. Okay? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
All right, so we're doing Paradise Lost. All right. This is the national epic of the British Empire. If you are a member of the British Empire, which rules the world today, the Anglo-American Empire, it rules the world today. If you are an elite member of the British Empire, you memorize this poem, okay? And it becomes part of your soul, basically. And it's beautiful, okay? So this was written by a man named John Milton. And John Milton, he was a rebel. He was a free thinker. He questioned the world. He fought for himself. And he was a passionate advocate of free speech. He was a man who wrote Paradise Lost. And he wrote it when he was blind. He could not see. Therefore, he had to speak it out, and his secretaries had to write it down for him. And as you can see, well, if a blind man is able to recite poetry, you must think he is a prophet. He's a messenger of God. What he is revealing to you is divine truth. Okay? All right? So, John Milton. And his most famous work is called Paradise Lost. And Paradise Lost is the foundational text of many secret societies. They read this, they discuss this, they worship this text. And within this text lies the secrets of the universe. Okay? But only, this is really hard, but only if you understand the secrets yourself can you see the secrets embedded in Paradise Lost. Okay? All right, so what we're going to do is we will read two speeches by Satan. The plot of Paradise Lost is really, really simple. It's trying to reimagine the fall of man. Remember, Adam and Eve are in the Garden of Eden. Then they eat that fruit and God banishes them. Okay? So Milton is trying to tell the story again. And he imagines a serpent who tricks Eve into eating the fruit as Satan himself. And Satan was God's favorite angel. They had a falling out. Satan rebelled against God. God won the war, and Satan and the devils are now banished to hell. And Paradise Lost begins with the devils discussing what to do. They've lost this war against God. They will never, ever defeat God. Now they're stuck in hell. So now what do they do? Some propose that, you know what, let's just create an empire. Okay, some are like, you know what, let's just sit back and enjoy life. Okay, but Satan is determined to seek vengeance against God. And so what he wants to do is go to the Garden of Eden and corrupt Adam and Eve and destroy humanity forever. Okay, so they all agree this is a great plan, but now the question then is, who's going to go? Because it's dangerous, right? Because you're escaping hell, there are angels guarding hell. But even if you leave hell, you go into the abyss. You go into space, right? And you don't even know where Earth is. You get lost for all of eternity. So no one wants to go. So at this time, when no one wants to go, Satan steps up and says, I will go. Okay, and this is his speech. O progeny of heaven, imperial thrones, with reason have deep silence and demur seized us. Though undismayed, okay? I know you guys are scared, all right? Long is the way and hard that out of hell leads up to light. Our prison strong, this huge convex of fire, outrageous to devour, immerses us round ninefold, and gates of burning adamant barred over us prohibit all egress. This prison is designed to keep us here for all of eternity. It will be hard to escape this prison. These paths, if any paths, the void profound of unessential night receives him next. Wide gaping and with utter loss of being threatens him, plunged in that abortive gulf. If thence he escape into whatever world or unknown region, what remains him less than unknown in dangers and as hard escape. Okay, if you can leave hell, you're still up in the abyss of the universe, right? You're going to be floating there for all of eternity. You don't know where you're going. But I should ill become this throne, O peers, and this imperial sovereignty, adorned with splendor, armed with power, if aught proposed and just of public moment in the shape of difficulty or danger could deter me from attempting. Wherefore do I assume these royalties and not refuse to reign, refusing to accept as great a share of hazard as of honor, do alike to him who reigns and so much to him do of hazard more as he above the rest. Okay, so what he's saying here is really simple. I'm your leader, and therefore I must go. You have trusted me to lead you for all eternity, and therefore I will risk my entire life to prove my worth. High honor sits. Go therefore, mighty powers, tear of heaven, though fallen, intend at home, while here shall be our home, what best may ease the present misery, and render hell more tolerable. If there be cure or charm to respite or deceive or slack the pain of this ill mansion, intermit no watch against a wakeful foe, while I abroad through all the coast of dark destruction seek deliverance for us all. This enterprise none shall partake with me. I am your leader. I will go by myself. You guys can just sit here and like sip, you know, have some drinks, watch some TV, enjoy yourself. I don't care, okay? I'm your leader. I will go by myself to redeem us, to deliver us from our torment, okay? So as you can see, this is heroic. He is the grand hero. A couple of things I will say about the speech is, number one, what he's describing, and secret societies believe this, is he's describing his ascent from hell as almost our souls leave our bodies, to the heavens. Okay? And some secret societies believe that when you die, the first person you meet is Satan. Because it is Satan who knows how to take you from this world, the prison world, to the light. Because he's done this. Okay? So Satan is a very important part of our journey back to the monad. Also, if you study this poetry very closely, you study the imagery, what he's describing almost is a baby leaving the womb, right? Because the baby is in the womb, a prison, and then the baby escapes. So secret societies believe that life and death are the same thing. To be born, you must die. And when you die, you are born again. Okay? All right. The other thing is that these secret societies will use the speech as an initiation ceremony for members. When you join a secret society, you must by yourself choose to fight for all of humanity by yourself. You must be the hero. Okay? You must know when you join a secret society, people will hunt you. People want to kill you for speaking the truth. Do you dare to go on this journey? Okay? So that's the first speech. The second speech is much more important. This is a speech where Satan, the serpent, convinces Eve to eat the fruit. Okay? And this speech is very powerful. Okay? So I'm going to read it really fast and then explain to you what it means. O sacred, wise, and wisdom-giving plant, mother of science, now I feel thy power within me clear, not only to discern things in their causes, but to trace the ways of highest agents deemed however wise. Eve is talking to the serpent, and Eve is of course like, hey, what can you speak? And the serpent says, because I ate that fruit from the knowledge of good and evil. It gives you power, okay? So the serpent now wants to convince Eve to eat that fruit, so he invokes the power of the tree, right? Oh, sacred tree, give me the power to speak so well that I convince Eve to do the impossible. Queen of this universe, do not believe those rigid threats of death. Ye shall not die. How should ye? By the fruit, it gives you life to knowledge. By the threatener, look on me, me who have touched and tasted, yet both live. Okay? So God has warned Eve, Adam and Eve, if you eat this fruit, you will die. And the serpent is saying, no, that's not true. Look at me. I eat the fruit and I'm still alive. And life more perfect have attained than fate meant me by venturing higher than my lot. Shall that be shut to man, which the beast is open? Or will God incense his ire for such a petty trespass and not praise rather your dauntless virtue? What's in the saying here is really important. If he is a true God, he will reward you for your risk-taking, right? He said the fruit will kill you as a test. A true God will want you to become better and better. And you can only do that by transgressing, by making mistakes, by disobeying authority. And a true God would reward you for seeking more knowledge. Whom the pain of death denounced, whatever thing death be, deter not from achieving what might lead to happier life. Knowledge of good and evil, of good, how just, of evil, if what is evil be real, why not known, since easier shunned. We can only be good people if we know what evil is. Right? If you don't know if good and evil, then you're just stupid. Okay? It's because you shun away from evil, you ignore evil, you fight evil, that you're a good person. God therefore cannot hurt you and be just. Not just, not God, nor feared then, nor obeyed. Your fear itself of death removes the fear. Why then was this forbid? Okay? So he's asking himself, why would God not allow you to eat that fruit? Why but to awe, why but to keep ye low and ignorant, his worshippers? He knows that in the day ye eat, therefore, your eyes that seem so clear, yet are but dim, shall perfectly be then open and cleared, and ye shall be as gods. So what Satan is saying is this. There's two possibilities, okay? Either God is testing you. God really wants you to disobey him because that will allow you to achieve more virtue and knowledge. Or God is enslaving you and keeping you ignorant because God is afraid that you might become God himself. Okay, so there are two possibilities. All right? What can your knowledge hurt him or this tree impart against his will of all be his? Or is it envy and can envy dwell in heavenly breasts? If he is God, he is in control of everything. He knows everything. Therefore, if you eat this fruit, how could I possibly challenge him? Unless he's a false God. Unless he's tricking you. Unless he's deceiving you. Unless he's trying to imprison you. Okay, that's the only possibility. Now, this is Satan's speech. And you know, I took Milton in college. I was an English major at Yale. And I took in a semester of Paradise Lost. And at university, I was taught that this speech shows you how clever and evil Satan is. He's lying to Eve. God is invincible, omniscient. You can't eat a fruit and become God. That's ridiculous. Also, Eve is stupid because she believes him, right? That's what you're taught in university. That's what you believe. But, this is really important, when you actually read the Bible, Satan is telling the truth. Satan's logic is what the Bible says. Okay? A professor at Yale will tell you that Satan is lying. When you actually read the Bible by yourself, you will see he's telling the truth. So we're going to read the Bible together, okay? This is what the Bible says. This is the Word of God. All right, so this is Genesis. Now the serpent was more crafty than any other wild animal that the Lord God had made. He said to the woman, "Did God say, you shall not eat from any tree in the garden?" Okay? So in the Bible, this is actually not Satan. It's just a serpent. The woman said to the serpent, "We may not eat of the fruit of the trees in the garden, but God said, you shall not eat of the fruit of the tree that is in the middle of the garden, nor shall you touch it, or you shall die." But the serpent said to the woman, "You will not die, for God knows that when you eat of it, your eyes will be open, and you'll be more like God, knowing good and evil." Okay? So this is exactly what Satan said. Okay? And this is what the Bible is saying as well. Now, let's move on. Eventually, God banishes Adam and Eve for eating the fruit. And you believe that they were banished because they disobeyed God. But if you actually read the Bible, that's not what it says. For disobeying God, God punishes both Adam and Eve. Eve now, when she gives birth, will suffer pain, right? And Adam will now have to work hard to grow food. That's a punishment. The banishment is not the punishment. So another question then is, why were they banished? Again, let's read the Bible, okay? So when the woman saw that the tree was good for food and that was a delight to the eyes and that the tree was to be desired to make one wise, she took of its fruit and ate. And she was also gave some to her husband who was with her and she ate. Then the eyes of both were opened, okay? So Satan is telling the truth. You will not die, you will learn. You will become higher, okay? Satan was telling the truth, all right? So why did God kick Adam and Eve out? And the Lord God said, "See, the man has become like one of us, knowing good and evil, and now he might reach out his hand and take also from the tree of life and eat and live forever." This is why. There are two trees, the tree of knowledge, which allows you to have the mind of God, and the tree of life, which allows you to live as long as God. What God is saying is this, if Adam and Eve ate that fruit from the knowledge of good and evil, and then they eat also a fruit from the tree of life, they will be like us. Satan was telling the truth, and God was lying to Adam and Eve all along. Okay? So now the question then is, how did Eve know that Satan was telling the truth? How does she know? How? Well, the problem is if you try it once and you're wrong, you die, right? So how does she know? She was certain that Satan was telling the truth. She was certain. Yes, he must be telling the truth. Why? The light in us, you understand? The true God. The true God still speaks to us today, right? The false God will lie to us, but inside you, in your heart, is the light that connects you back to the monad. And that tells you what is false, what is true. Okay, that's how she knew. All right? So you see, Paradise Lost is now showing us the lost secrets of the universe. All right. So I'll finish by talking about the Nephilim. In the Bible, it says that the Nephilim are the children of the from angels and women, okay? So when people began to multiply on the face of the ground and daughters were born to them, the sons of God saw that they were fair, and they took wives for themselves of all that they chose. And the Lord said, my spirit shall not abide in mortals forever, for they are flesh. Their days shall be 120 years. Okay? So now God sees Nephilim as a threat as well. The Nephilim were on the earth in those days, and also afterward, when the sons of God went into the daughters of humans who bore children to them. These were the heroes that were of old, warriors of renown. Okay? This is really important because it introduces the Nephilim, which is still around today, okay, according to these secret societies. But also, what it's doing is this. It's telling us the children, the heroes that are of old, warriors of renown, who are they? They're Hercules. They're Achilles. They're Theseus. They're all heroes from different mythologies. Where do they come from? They come from the mating of angels and humans. The sons of God, who are they? They are the old gods. Zeus, Ares, Apollo. Okay? So this is the beginning of monotheism, where the Bible is trying to destroy polytheistic mythologies and create one universe where the God is supreme. Okay? And in this universe, Zeus now becomes a son of God. And the children that Zeus has with mortal woman are now called the Nephilim. So Hercules is Nephilim. Okay? So we'll go into this theme throughout the semester where the Bible is a tremendous act of propaganda that tries to reinvent reality around one true God. Okay? But by doing that, it's denying our intuition and it's denying the history of humanity. All right, okay, so we'll continue this theme next class. Any questions before we conclude? Yes.
Well, I think nowadays a lot of us will pray to God like for getting something that we wanted, but as you said, like, are we praying to the truth God or the false God? Do we know? Or like, do we get to know like from our wishes?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So according to these secret societies, okay, the truth is that when you pray, you're praying to the false God. Because where's the true God? It's inside you, okay? So don't pray to an outside force. Look inside to you and ask yourself, I know for a fact what is true. If I believe in myself enough, then I will find the truth, okay? And actually, that's a theme throughout Western poetry and literature. The theme is that we will always be in conflict between the devil and God, between good and evil. And what we must do is not say, like, I must surrender to God. What we must do is believe in ourselves. Make mistakes, but know that you will eventually find a light because the light is in you, okay? As long as you still believe in yourself, all these mistakes you make will become your strength because they become part of your wisdom, okay? That's the divine truth that these secret societies are trying to promote. It's okay to make mistakes. It's okay to do evil, but listen to the light, and the light will tell you how to redeem yourself, okay? The possibility for redemption, for growth, for imagination is all in us because of our connection to the monad. And the monad will reward you for believing in yourself, but you must first believe in yourself. And believing in yourself means often defying authority, making mistakes, transgressing against the rules of society. Okay? And that's the ultimate secret that these secret societies are trying to keep. All right, any more questions? That was a really good question, thank you.
Well, the gods are usually depicted as the most beautiful. Then why gods like Zeus, they will come to human society and give birth fertilize with the human girls?
Okay, So the question then is, why are the angels doing this? Okay, there are two explanations. Okay, so the first explanation is these angels are created by the false god, right? So they're wicked anyway. Okay, the second explanation is that If you're like a hot looking woman and you see an angel, I don't know, man. You know, you're probably gonna wanna marry that person. Okay, all right, anyway, if you're interested in learning more, there's a book called The Book of Enoch, which goes into detail about the Nephilim, okay? But the Nephilim are a really important topic throughout the semester because a lot of secret societies believe in the Nephilim, and that's gonna motivate them before, okay? Now, what I've discussed today is how the secret societies were born. And as you can see, they started off as a noble mission. But then the question then is like, how do they become corrupted over time? Well, this is something I will discuss later on, okay? All right, so I'll see you guys next class.